Greetings, dear congregants. Pastor Andrew here with an update from The Story Must Be Told. The Story will be taking a 2-week hiatus at the end of the month. We won't be releasing a story on September 22nd, and we're going to take a break from our Patreon-exclusive 522 Club on September 29th. We'll be back on our normal schedule with a brand new story on October 6th. Stay healthy and greasy, dear congregants. And remember, the story's gonna get ya. Ha ha.
It's like, I don't know. Sometimes I don't even feel like Brother Reed, you know? Like, I look inside and I'm all, who are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. And do you think it has something to do with, when you were Chalms?
Yeah, probably.
You should talk to Chalms. He was Brother Reed for a long time.
Yeah.
Maybe he can give you some perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Big A. I knew I could count on you to tell me what I need to...
Pastor Andrew.
What is it, Devin?
I had another nightmare.
All right, saddle up, partner. Come on in.
Oh, Brother Reed, I didn't know you'd be in Pastor Andrew's bedroom, too.
Yeah.
On his bed.
Yeah.
In matching pajamas.
Yeah.
Devin, if you have matching pajamas with your best friend in the whole wide world, why wouldn't you wear them during a late-night gab sesh about feelings?
True. Can I join you guys?
Well, that doesn't bother me, partner.
You guys smell good. I was kind of wondering, do you think you could, never mind.
Devin, what is it?
No, it's dumb.
Come on, partner, out with it.
Okay. Do you guys think you could tell me a story?
Oh, that's so sweet.
All right, partner. I think we could make that work. In fact, I came here to tell Pastor Andrew a story myself. It happened to me just last week. I was eating the new butternut chunks flavor, gas apple, in the appropriate story manner. I let the squash chunks get nice and soft in tepid water. Then I let them sit in my mouth until they dissolved into a loose bolus that slid down my throat by accident. I had a big bowl, and when I was done, I thought to myself, what a blast! Why, heck, I should have another bowl. So I did. Smack, smack, stew, stew, gulp, gulp, you betta, huh? But that wasn't enough either. So I had another bowl, and another! I finished one box, then another, and still I wasn't done. Chomps! I shouted. He said, put on your sailor outfit. We're going to the grocery store. So we drove to the Kroger, and I'm thinking, wow, this place is packed. Cars overcrowded the parking lot, pulled up at weird angles, blocking every entrance. A Camry smashed through the front doors, broken glass everywhere, and it was on fire. People were out of their cars, screaming to a brightly lit window on the second story. This is what they screamed. Chunks, chunks, butternut chunks, 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 butternut chunks. Said Chalms. You're right, I said. They're glut-glut for butternut. I took off my sunglasses. And so am I. I ran to the crowd, mouth foaming, lungs popping and gasping. Chunks! I added my voice to the chorus. Chunks! Butternut chunks! Well, that must have been enough, because the second I made my cry, Mr. T.T. Kroger himself opened the lit window. He wore double-breasted pajamas, and his skin didn't seem to fit around his face, as though it was a loose mask pulled across his eyes. In his eyes was the purest delight, so pure they glowed green.
I have heard your cries, gentle consumers.
He boomed from the open bay windows.
And I tell you now, you have made this old heart swell in chunky mass.
The crowd roared. Many were in tears.
I know why you're here. Your taste buds bloomed like spring flowers at one sup of the new triumphant butternut chunks. Oh, gas, apple! Why is it so addicting? Why does it taste so goddamn good? I don't know, but hear this. You shall have your fill.
At that, a troop of Kroger employees in purple and green leaned over the parapets of the grocery roof and chucked hundreds of packages on parachutes. Hans reached up like a class of eager tots when Sister Callista asks, "Who does the story punish?" My hands joined the fray and plucked a package from the sky. Yes, yes, yes! My eyes scanned the parcel. Butternut chunks, even gassier apple! Me oh my! The hundreds of chunkheads and I ripped the parcels open and proceeded to eat the chunks, raw and dry. It clung to my throat like wood glue, and I could taste the hint of apples and the bold punch of gasoline. What a rush! I coughed and spat hard against the bulging mass blocking my esophagus, my cheeks wet with spit and tears.
Ooh, me likey!
Chalms just shook his sweet, drippy head. At home, we watched the news.
Crowds have mobbed grocery stores across the country today for the newest flavor of butternut chunks, gas apple. We go to Tom. Tom?
Thanks, Brimby. As you can see, the crowds are angry, hungry, and demanding one thing. Chunks.
They showed footage from both Portland's, Toledo, Shanghai, Berlin, and Cape Town. People chanting, effigies hoisted on poles. It was inspiring. You could tell the newsman was touched by the way his eyes glowed so green.
But in a true sign of humanity, these grocery stores aren't hoarding their chunks, but giving them out for free. I've never seen such generosity. Why do they do it? Well, I think it has something to do with their butternut hearts. This is Tom Christ, nephew, signing off. Goodbye, newswoman.
See, I told Sholmes, all your talk of conspiracies is a bunch of nonsense. You heard it from our corporate-owned local news affiliate. The grocery tycoons are like all rich people. They just want to make the world a better place. Chalms shrugged. Maybe he didn't hear me. My mouth was full of butternut chunks. I didn't stop eating them all night, no matter how scaly my skin became, nor how cold my blood. That night, I got a bad case of the shivers like you wouldn't believe. Couldn't sleep. Then I remembered my precious chunks. Nothing treats a funk like a butternut chunk, I said, quoting the commercial. I groaned and twitched my way down the hall to the pantry and pulled out the butternut chunks box. But my grip was weak. The chunks fell and littered the floor. I couldn't let them go to waste. I fell to the hardwood and began a lick, lick, licking. It tasted even better mixed with the loose grit of my unswept floors. Then it happened. A hot wave washed down me from the top of my greasy hair to the bottom of my greasy feet. Oh, mama, I said involuntarily. A cold wave followed the heat, then a shiver so bad my teeth clacked, my spine popped, and from between my open knees, bloop, 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 something fell from my generous body. I looked down and saw an egg. It was the size of a teddy bear. Now, this was probably the first egg I've ejected, and I gotta say, it was neat. Like many Americans, I've often wondered what my eggs look like. And I'll tell you now, shiny. It was bright in the dark, a healthy green glow I associated with vigor. I shall name you Brother Reed Jr. So that's why I had an egg. You might have seen me with it, just lugging an egg around. It was one hot egg, steamy in the morning, a nice dry heat by night. Didn't have to pop my stinker on it or nothing. Self-incubating, very modern. I kissed it, slept beside it, stroked it, and clothed it in all the finest egg dress. Little did I know, all the while, Chalms was furious. Flash forward to Saturday morning, and I woke to a delicious smell. Ooh, someone's frying up some nice breakfast affair, I said, smacking my lips juicily. I walked into my hovel's kitchen, and what did I find? Chalms, sitting at the stove, scrambling the biggest, most overflowingest pan of egg I ever saw. Brother Reed Jr., I cried. Chalms, how could you? I fell to the floor, beating my chest, scratching my eyes, winking my nipples. I raised a hand to Chalms, ready to strike. He held up his spatula, body tensed for my attack. When all of a sudden, I heard it.
Breaking news,
said Tom Christ's nephew on the TV.
The Chunk Riots have ended in tragedy. It's been reported that upon consumption of the chunks, consumers laid an egg that, when raised to term, hatched into a monstrous, throat-ripping lizard. Everyone's fucking dead. Everyone who ate chunks, that is.
My hand wavered in the air. I looked down on Chalms, no longer in anger, but in newfound awe.
The lizards, it is suspected, all ran off. And that's why no one will ever know why it ever happened. Ever. Guess it's a mystery.
Tom Christ's nephew winked, and his eyes glowed green. A sign of honesty. Chalms, I said. You saved my life. I don't know what to say except, bon appetit! The egg tasted like gasoline. The story must be told.
Wow, I can't believe Chalms did that for you. All he does for me is hide in my closet.
Yeah, he's a sweetheart deep down. An egg-frying little sweetie BB.
It's funny, when you mentioned those glowing green eyes, it reminded me of something that happened to me. Do you guys think I could... That's stupid.
What is it?
You guys will just laugh at me.
Partner, come on. When have we ever laughed at you?
Well...
Okay. Do you think I could tell you a story?
Oh, sweetie. Oh, yeah. All right, partner. I guess we could humor you for just a little story. Just remember... We'll be judging you.
Okay. Well, so here it is.
The pee room. The story begins at night, or last night as a family. We were all there in the kitchen at my parents' house. Everyone was home for the holidays. I was probably in my early 20s. We'd just cleaned the dishes after dinner, and everyone was hovering. Me, my mom, dad, my sister Olivia. It came up the same way it had always come up. It was time to divvy up bedrooms. I put the numbers into a hat, like always. The highest number had to sleep in the pee room. The pee room was, as the name suggests, where people inexplicably piss the bed. Once, my grandfather took a whiz so long and deep, it went through the mattress and ruined the floor. Doctors had never seen anything like it. Said he must have whizzed for 6 minutes. We put him in a home after that. I remember he took the news quietly. Dad once let it go so bad the bed rotted away. And Mom? I have too much respect for my mother to say what she did. We had our theories. The pee room had no windows, so it was a total blackout, you see. The theory was that you were so asleep that you lost all control. Another theory was its proximity to the dishwasher. the whooshing and sloshing latched onto your subconscious, tricking you into draining the main vein. Others thought Kev haunted it. The pee room originally belonged to my oldest brother, Kev. Kev left home when I was young. I only knew him from pictures. My parents always said that he was still alive, just stubborn. My mom made a point to say that Kev never wet the bed. Kev was good, she'd say, as if she was the one who needed to hear it. That night, the last night, my sister Olivia drew the highest number, which sentenced her to the pee room. We were all so relieved that we started chanting, "Pee room, pee room, pee room." "It's time," my mother said, placing a hand on Olivia's shoulders. Olivia looked crestfallen. I felt like I should do something. Her room was the one that had been converted into an office, after all. I offered to take her place. "I'll sleep in the pee room, Olivia." My family looked at me like I'd lost my mind. "You were so close to Grandpa, we won't let you go through that again," my dad said, kissing me wetly on the forehead. That night, we all went to bed quietly. I said, "Good night," and no one answered. I was too gassy to sleep, so I took a little lap to move the bubbles around. That's when I saw the light was on in the pee room. It was 3 a.m., but I opened the door without even thinking. Light washed over me, filled my head, brought me in. When it dimmed, I stood in the middle of what I would call a nice garage, like the families have on TV. It was unrealistically clean, but still very much a garage. Immaculate floors, but smelled like gas. Terrible lighting. Boxes everywhere. Tools clung to corkboard walls. A Rush poster hung in the corner. Mom, Dad, and Olivia all hung from hooks attached to a ceiling. Their bodies were limp and their eyes were dead like they'd been turned off. I tried to scream, but nothing came out. "Ugh, what the fuck, man?" A voice came from the other side of the room. A young blonde man in a lab coat walked toward me. A name tag dangled from his breast pocket. It read, "Kev," in all caps. I recognized him from pictures. "Kevin?" I screamed. "It's Kev. Well, Dr. Kev, but yeah," he replied, distracted. He was looking for something. A jar of teeth shattered on the ground. "God damn it," he yelled, wiping the palms of both hands down the length of his face. "Listen, I don't have time. You shouldn't have come in here. Can you just tell me what that box says next to you?" "It says big arms. Are you like a murder alien?" he interrupted. "I'm an alien, okay? Well, to you, technically. But a close cousin to humans, only slightly more advanced than Earth. I work for a company that lets my species vacation as humans. To aliens, it feels like being stoned. The company's called Vacation, so yeah, we're like a pitching wedge ahead of human intelligence." "Am I an alien?" I asked him. No. "You're the control," Kev yelled at me from the other side of the room while digging in a box of spare parts. "Every group needs one. The pee room is just a portal my company rents from another company. Probably from another company. Kind of like Wi-Fi. You've never noticed that your parents and sister are just vessels for the consciousness of another species?" "I don't think so," I mumbled. "Ha, wow, really? You've walked in on the three of them saying really mean things about you a bunch of times. It wasn't them, as you know them, of course, but tourists. It's funny and all, but a lot of paperwork on my end whenever I have to give you a reset." "Aha!" he yelled, holding an iPod mini. "Listen, I know what you're going to ask. But Kev, what's with all the piss?" He did a pretty spot-on imitation of me. "It's just a bug we haven't worked out. We have to take the vessels in all at once, so it's everyone's pee in that bed. That's why there's so much. You guys are pretty ashamed of that stuff, huh? When they put your grandfather away? Sheesh." He ripped off my mom's face and put it in a trash can. He briefly inspected the iPod before jamming it into the top of my mom's skull. Dad screamed for a split second and then went limp. "Ugh, not again." He looked around frantically before refocusing on me. "You gotta go, man. I don't have time for this." "Did you say something about a reset?" I asked, backing away toward the door. "Ah, yeah, buddy, sorry. This is gonna have to be a big one. You've just seen way too much here, and I can get in a ton of trouble. I'll have to send you back, man. Probably 10 years? "What, 10 years? Wait, don't!" I begged, but before I could defend myself, he grabbed the syringe and jammed it into my eye. I felt the tip touch my brain, and everything went black for what felt like centuries. Then, one day, a blue light appeared. A bright, digital blue. It was the glow of a 55-inch television on sleep mode. My small body was nested right underneath it on the floor. It was morning. I was 10 years old. My name was Devin. I knew this. My birthday was in April. My favorite food was spaghetti. I have a mom, a dad, and a sister, Olivia. I used to have a brother named Kev. I was on the floor of a basement in a sleeping bag I got from Cub Scouts. The smell was unfamiliar. I didn't know where I was, but I knew I wasn't home. I was at a sleepover. I had a crush on the girl dog from a Goofy movie, but then my thoughts were interrupted by a stampede coming down the steps. More boys, classmates. There must have been 8 of them. I could tell they were on a mission. Before I knew it, they towered over me like a burial. A burly older man stood behind the group. The blonde kid, who I knew to be the birthday boy, huffed at me. "I told you he pissed the bed, Dad. It's to the carpet." The dad put his hand on the carpet. It made a squish. He seemed to be more amazed than upset when he muttered to himself, "Fucking Christ." Even my hair was wet, but I didn't care. My name was Devin. I was 10 years old, soaked in piss, and life was brand new.
Oh, that's a good one, Devin. I like when things happen to you. Good, bad, doesn't matter, as long as you endure them.
Thanks.
Well, I feel like I need to toss a story in the ring, so to speak. But after this, it's nighty-night time for both of you, understood?
Yes, Pastor Andrew.
And you promise you'll go right to bed, no attitude?
Yes, Pastor Andrew.
And you'll brush your teeth and no fuss?
Yes, Pastor Andrew.
Okay, all right.
Those are good ones, Brother Reed and Devin. The story sure gotcha. Ha ha, it always does. Well, I've got one that'll tickle the heck out of your funny bones. When my dad was 30, he won a Presidential Medal for advancements in gravitational dynamics. But that didn't stop my mom from rubbing it in his face that she beat him to the punch 2 years earlier, when she herself won a Presidential Award for groundbreaking research in extragalactic physics. Man, oof. That was so long ago, I can't even tell you where I grew up. I do remember, though, it was this old farmhouse that needed some fixing up, but still, so much love in those walls. The house itself was like part of the family. It was home. The first 17 years of my life were an absolute dream. Every summer, we'd go on vacation, although mostly to boring places, to see big craters where meteors had hit. At home, we ate dinner as a family almost every night, but still, my parents didn't talk about work too much at the table, and they were super supportive that my sister and I weren't really into science. My mom used to say she was jealous of us because we'd never have to deal with politicians. I came home from rehearsal one night, and there was this energy in the house. As soon as I walked in the door, my dad gave me this big hug. He was dressed up and beaming ear to ear. He said my mom had made a huge discovery and told me to get dressed up because we were going to have a nice dinner as a family. Since we couldn't afford to go out, it was the next best thing to a restaurant. At the table, my mom hardly ate. She was too excited, talking with big hand gestures and using scientific terms I didn't understand. She broke it down for me and my sister and said she finally got proof that dark matter could be harnessed for energy, kind of like solar power, but way, way bigger, intergalactically bigger. And the way she found out was by cracking a code she noticed recurring all across the galaxy. She found it repeating again and again across the universe, and it finally clicked when she was working on a crossword puzzle at work. She realized it said, "Hello." And it was emitted in every human language. She had a big presentation first thing in the morning for representatives ranging from NASA to the Department of Defense. My dad popped a bottle of champagne. He even poured a sip for me and my sister. He toasted her, saying he was proud of her and proud of all of us. Things were going to change for us in the world. The next day, I rushed home from school, but my dad wasn't there to greet me at the door. My parents were whispering in the kitchen, but they stopped when I entered the room. My dad's eyes were red. My mom's face was gray. My dad yelled at me and told me to go to my room. He put his hand on my shoulder and squeezed a little too hard, leading me up the stairs. I didn't ask any questions, but from the top of the landing, I watched him pull the curtain back to look out the window. When I got to my own room, I looked out the window too. There was a black car across the street, and a man in black taking pictures of our house. My parents stopped going to work. Black cars were permanently outside our house. My sister was too young to understand, so I told her they were angels making sure we were okay. we were pulled from school. My dad said, "I'm a goddamn scientist. I can teach you my goddamn self." But he never taught us. Instead, he and my mom drew up big plans for a satellite dish connected to a two-way radio. He constructed it, and my mom manned the microphone, sending out tiny beep, beep, beeps into the sky. Our phone line was cut. Water and electricity would intermittently go out. My parents kept the satellite and radio connected to a generator, and that thing ran all hours. My mom sat at the microphone night and day. She never slept. My dad's hair went gray. At dinner one night, I finally mustered the courage to ask how they were doing. My dad didn't look up. My mom said, "We're close." One night, I was shook awake by my little sister. She was crying and wasn't making any sense. She pulled me out of bed and took me to the window. A blinding blue light blared through the curtains. In the backyard was a floating turquoise sphere. Light shot out at all angles, and it emitted this calming, strange melody. A bright blue dome covered them and the house. Underneath the dome, it was bright like daylight. It was weird. My parents stood in front of the rotating sphere. There were two figures with them. They weren't human. They were short and kind of fat. My mom knelt down and held her arms out, and one stepped forward and cautiously hugged her. Then there was this screeching of tires, and black cars surrounded them. However, the protective dome widened, just blocking the agents out. The men got out of their car, drew their weapons, and fired. But the bullets were caught in the plasma and shot right back at them. It was the first time I saw a man die. My mom turned and jogged into the house, protected by the blue dome. She came up the stairs and into the bedroom. She looked better, happier, like healthier. She was crying, but she wasn't sad. She got on her knees and hugged us. She explained she didn't have time, but that she and my father loved us both very much. She said they weren't leaving us, but they did have to go away. My mom assured us we'd be safe and that they would always be with us, but in a way we might not understand. She told my sister to do whatever I said. She told me I was in charge and that they were so proud of me. But then she warned us, as soon as they left, we had to leave too, and we wouldn't have much time. She gave me the keys to the family car and told us to both be safe. I was too stunned and stammered that I loved them both. She said that if we needed them, we just had to listen. She was out the door before I could ask what she meant. My sister and I looked out the window. The agents were on their backs, bleeding in the dirt. My parents turned to wave, then the tiny figures led them into the small sphere. It blared its strange melody, then zapped into nothingness, leaving the grass burning. My sister and I packed a suitcase and headed west. We ran out of gas money the next night. When I checked the trunk for an extra gas can, there was a strange metal case full of money. At least we wouldn't starve. My sister and I never talked about what happened. Maybe she was too young to understand, or she just convinced herself it didn't happen at all. A big hole was left in me, though. The few times I've taken vacations for myself, I go to where my parents used to take us as kids. I pretend they're there with me and get a hotel room by myself, but I usually check out before I even lay down. I don't really sleep. I wake up early and pace around the story center and look out the window into the backyard, up at the stars. When my insomnia is really bad, I walk around the farmhouse in my head and go room to room, just remembering all I can. Sometimes I can even smell how it used to smell and feel the floorboards on my feet. And sometimes, usually when I'm feeling really down the day before, I'll wake up and feel like I'm not alone. I can feel the blue color of that ship that took them, if that makes any sense at all. But most importantly, I can hear the melody the ship played. Not with my ears, but throughout my whole body. I like to think it's my parents checking in. That's when they say hello.
Anyway, that's all ancient history. Thanks, Story, I discovered the story with Brother Reed. And the story is an entirely separate thing from all this. Believe me, I'm sure of that much. I guess the story could be from space or the universe or whatever, since the story is all things and no things, but I keep this lowercase s story just for me. I am pooped. Ugh. How about you guys? Do you want to go see if... they're sleeping. Okay, well, nighty-night, you two. Greasy dreams.
Thank you for listening to The Story Must Be Told. I teach an erotic pottery class at the Pasadena YMCA. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at TSMBTPod. Rate and review us on iTunes to spread this supple story word. Sign up for my intro to erotic pottery class, and you can make a ceramic mug of a dog doing something real dirty. Bark, bark. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/TSMBT. For $5.22 a month, you get exclusive access to our bonus podcast, The 522 Club. It comes out every other Tuesday. Oh yeah, and retirees get 20% off of my intermediate erotic pottery class. I'll teach you how to make an ashtray in the shape of two birds getting real fucky. And if you want to spend a little more cheddar for our Patreon, you'll get an exclusive welcome package and hear your name in one of our services. And that'll take you a long way in my advanced erotic pottery class. I'll show you how to make a teapot that looks like JFK getting down and dirty with Lee Harvey Oswald. Because time heals all wounds. Just go to patreon.com/TSMBT and see all the tiers and all the benefits that might await you. Lay with one of my erotic pottery creations and conceive a child. The child shall be made of clay, and his name shall be David, and he shall be king. We'll see you in week. Sip, sip. Ooh, heck yes. The coffee in this erotic mug tastes like lust. Sip, sip.
The story must be told.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.